This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
For millions of kids, the popular X-Men animated series from the 90s served as a kind of gateway drug into the world of the X-Men in particular and comics in general. Now the story has been continued on Disney+. X-Men 97 picks up right where the original series ended, with most of the same characters and many of the same voice actors. But changes are taking place at Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, secrets get revealed, the team roster gets shuffled, and beloved characters meet shocking fates. What hasn't changed is everything fans expect from the X-Men: big fights, big powers, and lots of mutant melodrama. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about the Disney Plus series X-Men 97 on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History, from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, executive producer of Insecure, Black Twitter, A People's History tells the story of how black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. This message comes from Capital One, presenting sponsor of the 2024 Tiny Desk Contest. Earlier this year, unsigned musicians from around the country submitted their original songs for the 10th annual Tiny Desk Contest. The panel of judges are hard at work picking standout entries, and you can follow along and choose your favorite videos as well. The winner gets to play their very own Tiny Desk concert, then headline a tour with NPR Music this summer. Want to come along for the ride? Visit tinydeskcontest.npr.org to learn more, then check out the Venture X card from presenting sponsor Capital One. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Joining me today is Andrew Limbong. He's the host of NPR's Book of the Day podcast and a reporter for the Culture Desk. Hey, Andrew.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, Glenn?
Yo, yo. Also with us is Regina Barber. She's a host and reporter for NPR's science podcast, Shortwave. Welcome to the show, Regina.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Yes, it is. And rounding out the panel is Vulture TV critic Roxana Haddadi. Hey, Roxana.
Hello.
Hello, hello. The original X-Men animated series ran on Fox from 1992 to 1997. The show adapted iconic X-Men storylines from the comics and captured the team's artisanal mix of mutant mayhem and melancholy.
I am Phoenix!
Hell yeah. Think of the new series X-Men 97 as basically season 6. The look and feel of the animation is a bit more polished, and the situation has changed. Team leader Professor X is presumed dead, and the once villainous Magneto has taken over the running of the school. Cyclops and Jean Grey are expecting a bundle of joy. But otherwise, things seem normal. Rogue and Gambit are canoodling, Jubilee does fireworks, and Storm continues to be awesome.
I am Storm, mistress of the elements! Surrender the boy, or face my fury!
There it is right there. But head writer Beau DeMeo, who parted ways with the series just weeks before its premiere, attempts to thread a very difficult needle, giving old fans the X-Men they remember, but introducing enough twists and shocks to hook viewers old and new. X-Men 97 is streaming now on Disney+. We've seen the first 5 episodes that have aired, and we will be discussing them because, hoo boy. So beware spoilers if that's your thing. Now, I know y'all were fans of the OG series, so consider your bona fides established. But I am curious to hear what you think of the new show. Roxana, let's start with you. What do you think?
I vibe with it very much. Mm-hmm. Like you said, my bona fides are established. I don't need to talk about watching this every Saturday, but I did. Mm-hmm. 97 really takes me back to that. I wrote a piece after watching the first three episodes about how it really validates your nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. Nostalgia is dangerous, right? Like, we don't want to be lured back into the past and be spoon-fed everything we liked once upon a time. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, the series does this, but in very intelligent, updated ways. I think the character dynamics are really solid so that these are recognizable people that we used to watch. But there is political context here and subtext that I think mm-hmm. feels very indicative of the 20 plus years that have passed since then. Mm-hmm. X-Men was always political. Mm-hmm. It was always interested in identity and self-expression and the government as an inherently possibly fascist institution. It does all of that really well. And so I've really enjoyed it.
All right. How about you, Regina?
It makes me look back at my young self and be like, oh, you were pretty cool. Like, I wrote a piece about Star Trek and how mm-hmm. Star Trek Next Generation and the social justice elements of it and the science elements of it, like, basically made my career. I became a scientist who did a lot of social justice. And mm-hmm. looking back, and when I was in elementary school, I was like made fun of for watching this. They're like, you're too old for cartoons. And mm-hmm. even though I was like 12, and I really had this like sense of this show, a little bit of shame. I was like, oh, you know, like, I shouldn't have been watching this. But now as an adult looking back and seeing all the themes that Roxana just mentioned, I was just like, I feel pretty proud of myself. You know, you think back of your childhood and you're like, you liked cringy things, you know, but this wasn't. Mm-hmm. I agree. It's good nostalgia, and it gives me a little bit of confidence to young Gina.
Oh, that's great. How about you, Andrew?
I now feel bad for what I'm about to say, because first of all, I'll say I'm glad we waited until now to do this episode, because I'm just looking at the little notepad file I have up from like when I was taking notes and watching it, and the first bullet point just says, are we not embarrassed? Like, are we not ashamed to be spoon-fed?
No.
Just
the answer is no.
Millennial nostalgia core like this? I felt so like,
how dare you?
I felt like we deserved better. We deserve more than just like regurgitating the same stupid theme song and the same beats and just
stupid. Wow.
Oh no. Man. Disagree.
I was just so confused as to who is this for? What am I doing here? Mm-hmm. And then episode 5 happens. And we'll talk about this later.
Yeah,
and then it sort of recontextualizes everything. And now I'm just like, begrudgingly, I think X-Men 97 pilled, though with some still like caveats about it all.
All right. That's interesting. This is a good mix, because mm-hmm. I came at this from a very different place than y'all. I am much older than y'all. I was in grad school when the series was on the air. And I was never an X-Men guy growing up. I mean, I just thought they were mopey and mm-hmm. and whiny, and they kept talking about their relationships, and I just wanted them to punch things.
They do both.
Yeah, they do both. When I was in grad school and this was on the air, I was pretending to read Thomas Pynchon and be an intellectual, and I was pretending I never read comics. But would I, if I was alone, watch this show?
Like, hide yourself.
But not for the characters. Didn't care about the characters. For, as you mentioned, the theme song.
Yes.
Let's hear a bit of the theme song.
So good.
Oh my God. Has there ever been in the history of the streaming medium a more universally ignored skip intro button? Because if you hit skip intro on this series, we can't even be casual friends. It is that iconic.
This TikTok came up and it was a man who is like slightly older than me, and he's like, skip intro, heck no, you know, and he's watching it, and his emotions of just like moving with the music, I was like, oh my God, this is me. Like, it instantly brought me back. How dare you, Andrew?
How dare you?
It was just so good. But I will say, to Andrew's point, it did take me a little while to get into it. Like, I was like kind of half watching the first one. I think the opening fight scene was really, really good. But then it took me a little while to get into the story. But yeah, I agree with you. 5 kind of locked me in.
I think the second one is what really hooked me.
Okay.
Because isn't the second one mm-hmm. sort of the Magneto being brought before the
UN?
That's
true. Yeah,
and telling them they suck to their face. I loved that. That was great. That was so characteristically Magneto.
All the X-Men have done is use their awesome power to protect a world that hates and fears them. Behold their reward. What must we do to be good enough?
That was good.
Yeah, that's true. But see, so I came to this series, right, and I saw the first couple episodes before it premiered, and I just thought, I was kind of in Andrew's camp. I was like, this is a nostalgia grab. It's just pretending the last 27 years hasn't happened. I've since learned that that was very intentional on the writer's part. But there was also, you know, there was a lot of things. There was the departure of the writer, which you can read all kinds of speculation about. Nothing's confirmed, but that just seemed odd. And then you will inevitably start picking up online chatter. Suddenly, X-Men has a subtext. Suddenly, they're ramming down our throats this social commentary. And it's like, they've been ramming since 1963. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, literally, that's their theme.
It's their whole point.
That is their organizing principle.
Yeah. And it is literally in every other X-Men adaptation.
Yeah. Absolutely. But we are circling back now because the show is a hit creatively and critically, but mostly because of episode 5. Mm-hmm. Episode 5 goes hard. My interest in the show, kind of like y'all, it's a linear growth curve.
Yeah.
And that episode 5, the one where the mutant island nation of Genosha is brutally attacked.
And they were talking so much for so long. And I was like, there's going to be a big battle.
There was a lot of talking. You're absolutely right. I should have seen it coming. But man, I didn't. And I don't have these things you humans call emotions. But I was pumping my fist during this last episode. There's a moment with Gambit and a motorcycle. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Again, this is kind of, you know, mutant cartoony action, but it's not the kind you expect because it comes with a body count, a real body count. What'd you guys make of it?
I mean, this whole episode is the extremes of what X-Men has always done really well.
Before the massacre on Genosha, I just want to make sure it doesn't get overshadowed. The moment where Scott Summers, you know, Cyclops, gets caught kissing Madeline Pryor.
Oh, gross. At the Kid Coast.
We should say Madeline Pryor is, of course, Jean Grey's clone. it's like we're describing One Life to Live, but you know.
But that's what I was going to say. It's always been very soapy, and I think that's fine. I mean, I prefer that than, you know, another grim, dark superhero who is weighed down by the weight of saving the world. Like, these people, you know, I can't say this word on air, but these people get down, and that's fine.
Yep.
But Andrew, so you were into the kiss.
Yes, but I think I was, you know, comics try to do the big splashy, like, a lot of people die. This is a whole tenor-changing event all the time. Glenn, I'm sure, like, every comic, you know, has, like, their, like, and even X-Men, the comics themselves, are guilty of this.
Nothing will ever be the same.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But I do feel like the kissing and canoodling and dancing and relationship stuff makes the violent stuff work and work quickly and work very efficiently for all of its power. I think that's where, because we are only 5 episodes in. They could have very much saved this for season finale ender.
Oh, yeah.
It was so effective, I think, because of all the soapy material.
I mean, I will say, as a tween, Gambit was very important to me, you know, and the soapiness.
Yeah.
You never wanted to make things official. I respected that. I played the swamp rat.
And I played your Cher.
Nobody who says Cher as much as he does can be completely straight. We all agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have any favorite little touches, you know, Gambit's crop top went viral, the mohawk on Storm, Magneto rocking some crazy Audrey Hepburn opera gloves, like he just stepped out of Breakfast at Tiffany's. I'm here for that. The way in the opening credits, they don't stay static. They reflect shifts in the show. Jean Grey gets a ponytail for a very important reason. That like you're meant to be like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's pointing at the screen. I was pointing at the screen, at the ponytail.
Oh, yeah.
any little touches?
I will say, as a kid, I remembered. I loved Jubilee because, like, I was like, an Asian, yay, like me, like, finally. Like, I was just like, I loved it. Mm-hmm. She is this foster kid, and she's lost, and, you know, she doesn't like being a mutant, and, you know, her parents are kind of, you know, wary. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, just younger than her, and I just really identified with her.
What I respect about episode 5 going so big is I have been in the middle of a Buffy rewatch. In season 2, when the big turn with Angel happens, it is the middle of the season. This used to be a things could happen in episodes that are not just the premiere or the finale. Mm-hmm. And that happened in X-Men all the time. Yeah. There were story arcs that were divided within the season. There were climaxes. There were highs. There were lows. I really appreciate that each episode runs through an insane amount of plot that keeps me engaged, and that's fun. And I also like that there's some experimentation in terms of where could one season of television go. From a purely episodic way, I just really appreciate that structure giving us something different from what a lot of TV does, and maybe being more similar with the comics, as you said, in terms of arcs and how they're structured.
Yeah, I mean, the writer has gone online and said that episode 5 he sees as a kind of a harrowing, sudden growing up moment. He compares it to the Pulse shooting. He compares it to 9/11. Mm-hmm. And he intentionally structured the season so that the first few episodes would seem incredibly nostalgic and same as and just more the same. And what happens in episode 5 is meant to shake them out of their complacency and make them realize how dangerous the world is in a way that is more resonant than, oh, there's a big robot after us. This is about the world is against us. And that that is meant to be a wake-up call. Andrew, do you have anything specific in the show that resonates with you?
Two things. I guess they're sort of the same thing. Is how little Wolverine gets gets some airtime, which is in a great way.
Right?
He's such a character. He's such a guy. And like, there could have been like Weapon X stuff and all this drama, but he takes a back seat. And instead, I really like how they have Cyclops really take center stage. And then in episode 5, after the big massacre happens, there's a scene where that feels very familiar, actually, where everyone's watching TV and Scott runs downstairs and just asks, like, how many, right? And I feel like that's such a, we're about to get, like, badass Scott, I feel like. We're about to get, like, OG, like, you know, real real hardcore Scott coming off. And I think that's an interesting way to give, you know, props to a character that I never picked him in Marvel versus Capcom 2. He's not, like, the most charismatic dude.
Famously,
But they're really giving him his shine, yeah.
I will say that was another little line that I loved. I think it was in the first episode, and the captured mutant says, "Are you one of the good guys?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And he's just like, Cyclops, you know, Scott is like the quintessential good guy. But that scene in the first episode where he just like lands, you know, out of the plane and just kills it, like, I agree. I never gave him his props.
Well, I never gave Jubilee her props. I always kind of, you know, I have watched the original series since when I kind of got over myself a little bit. And I just never liked, you know what it is? It's the jorts. Now, I understand. I understand the jorts are.
Kids love jorts. My kid loves them right now.
So do 35-year-olds. 35-year-olds love jorts.
This is the thing. And so because I was never a fan of Jubilee, my favorite moment is the one where a character mentions to Jubilee that the only reason they're reaching out to her is that Dazzler passed on the gig. And I think that is like, story checks out. Dazzler rules. Jubilee drools.
Ouch. The thing about the nostalgia of it all is we've seen bad nostalgia, right? I mean, I think we could argue that the latest Star Wars movies devolve into very bad nostalgia. Nostalgia that does not serve a purpose past, like you said, eat it up, eat up the sloth. But this isn't, I don't think that this is purely meant to placate us. I do think episode 5, Scott saying to the reporter, you don't get it because you're human. Like, there are so many things there that I think are pushing us back to the core X-Men idea of, like, what do we owe each other as a society and how quickly do we turn clannish and tribalist and bad. Being forced to think about that in your 30s or 40s or whatever age you're watching this show is helpful. But I do think being reminded of that the core of this series is not just like Wolverine's claws or whatever else we want to say. It is this idea of like reassessing what makes a society and a civilization. I think that's important.
Sometimes people like things because it's good. And like sometimes nostalgia is good because it's good. But sometimes it's not.
Sure.
Yeah.
Star Trek is good because it's good. Like it has a good theme. It has a good like line through it of social justice. And I think it's the same with X-Men. And if you have somebody who's making it who loves it, what more can you ask for?
I think it's like growing with your audience. And it feels like this series has done that. I mean, we haven't seen the back half of the season. Maybe it collapses. Who can say? But can episode say? Five at least feels bold enough to support whatever storytelling comes next. I'm willing to give it the rest of season one to say good show, good. Definitively. But for now, good show, good.
Because we can see what this show could have done, which is merely kill off a bunch of characters and say, look, shocking. What it did was it built that massacre into the infrastructure of the show, the bones of the X-Men itself, the bones that go back to 1963.
Well, I was watching this and I was curious for the general watcher, if this show would even make any sense if you don't, I don't know who the Morlocks are, you know, the little like mutants that live in the sewers and are all outcasts or even further outcasts. If I were to show this to my wife, would she be like, who's Emma Frost? Like, who's Sebastian Shaw? Yeah.
But in episode two, there is a scene where Magneto saves them.
Right.
From the human separatists.
Right.
And he refers to them as Morlocks. And then later on in that episode, he's like, I'm giving them a new home in Genosha.
I think,
you know, like some of us are going into this with more knowledge from the original series or from the comics or whatever. But I do think the show does its work in terms of contextualizing most of its characters and their motivations.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you heard what we think, right? I mean, I think Gambit's crop top said it best. The show rocks. We want to know what you think about X-Men 97. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Roxana Haddadi, Andrew Limbaugh, Regina Barber, this was a great discussion. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you have not yet signed up and want to show your support and listen to the show without a single solitary sponsor break, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fatima and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me, and I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.